go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 119 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. This episode will not be a memorable one. I am not happy with the topics I chose to discuss for this episode 119. That is my fault. I did not come correct, did not come 100 of this episode. I am already dreading how I'm going to make the things I'm going to discuss humorous, smutty, memorable. This episode is the NBA second of a back-to-back. We're playing backups and we have a cross-country flight right after. And I got no sleep because I was out at the bars till 4 a.m. And I went home with the cocktail waitress and we didn't get up till 11. And I showed up late a half hour to the shoot around at 1:30. And I had to get an IV to get my fluids back going. But I'm going to try and be uplifting and turn this episode into something. It's just whatever it's being molded into, it is not going to be memorable. It's not going to be something I'm going to be proud of. It's not something, fuck it. I'm going to try to make this. Fuck that energy. Let's fucking come correct. Let's go. You know what is memorable? The B-Man made a trip to the dentist this morning. 7 a.m. appointment. I was dreading having to get up early. Usually I get up at 8:30 on a weekday. So 7:30, I had to get up at 6:50. That dread of, I can't oversleep. So I don't fall asleep. And then I'm groggy all day. But that's not what I want to discuss. By the way, 7 a.m., whenever I make a doctor's and or dentist appointment, I always try to make the first appointment in the morning because, we all know, you have an appointment at 11:30 a.m., you're not getting in the office in the doctor's room until after 12. Like, you get in at 11:45, doctor doesn't come in until after noon, but, that's a hacky joke that's been done in the 80s. That's not what I want to discuss. So I'm in the waiting room, get in the office, dentist office, that is, 7:28, roll up, hello, what's your name? The B-Man, Brian Glass, the People's Degenerate. My face is, I'm famous, how do you not know me? Anyways, all right, checked in, medication, is your insurance anything different? Nope. All right, take a seat, we'll be right with you. And I'm there, waiting room, a seat much like this one right here on Verbal Graffiti. And I'm noticing, since I'm the first appointment that morning, all the dental hygienists are at the front desk discussing whatever it is they're discussing. I'm not listening to what they're talking about because they're babes, and who gives a fuck what babes have to say? It's not of importance to the B-Man or of anybody because they're just stupid. They're just stupid little dental hygienists, the little cheese puffs that they are. And I'm watching them. I'm not listening to what they say because I'm a misogynist. We've discussed that here at Verbal Graffiti. And I'm picking up a pattern, a similarity that all these dental hygienists possess. And that similar attribute that every single one of these dental hygienists have that I noticed this morning pre 7:30 a.m., is that they're all old hags, post 50, probably 55 years of age. And I found that stunning, problematic. That's not what I expected. You think a dental hygienist, a nurse's assistant, you just expect young, spryful, perky chest-wise, that is. But not these ladies. We're just these old hags. They were all having fun time. I'll give them that. Again, I was not listening to what it is they were discussing, but they all seemed in high spirits, laughing, seemed to be enjoying the morning and the job that they do as dental hygienists. But I was watching them for let's say 5 to 7 minutes. I was waiting till I got called into, I had a cleaning, no cavities. B-Man, I floss every day, multiple times a day. You should as well. Anyways, there I am. I'm looking at these dental hygienists and my mind starts to think, well, what do I make of this? Why are all these dental hygienists in their 50s, past their prime, barely any eggs at all? Their eggs aren't even scrambled. They're broken. They're seeping into the dirt in the ground. You can't use those eggs. They're old hags. Anyway, so I'm looking at them. What do I make of this? Because there was a time in America, and I suspect around the world, let's say pre-2000, where you'd have a lot of young, dental hygienists who are so young, their pheromones, they linger, and the hair doesn't have split ends, and there's no wrinkles, right by the eyes. There's no wrinkles right there, and their smiles put a smile on your face because they're beautiful, and beautiful people make you smile. But these dental hygienists were anything but beautiful. So why is that? Where did all those young dental hygienists with the fertile eggs that aren't cracked, that can be inseminated. Where are those ladies? Where are those babes? And why are they not here in the dentist office while I wait to get my teeth worked on? And I'm going in. I'm like, why? Where are they? Why are they not here? Why aren't they on the airplanes as flight attendants? Why are they not in the diners as waitresses? Why aren't they at the restaurants as bartenders and waitresses? Like, where have they all gone? And it hit me. It hit me Dwayne Haskins walked inebriated into the highway in Florida and got hit by a truck, a former QB from Ohio State. The thought hit my brain like that truck hitting Haskins a couple years ago. All of those babes are those would-be babes that would work in a dental office as a hygienist for a dentist. The reason why they don't work in this environment anymore is because all of those ladies that would be a dental hygienist in a previous era, a previous time, are now OnlyFans. They're OnlyFans and they have sugar daddies. Why work as a dental hygienist for 8 hours a day on your feet, putting your hands into gingivitis-infested mouths? Why do that 8 hours a day for the dream of hoping to have an affair with the dentist and have the dentist leave his wife when his wife becomes an old hag and marry the hot, spry, fertile dental hygienist that she is? In a prior era, that's where all these babes would be. They'd flock. There'd be lines to work as a dental hygienist, but no longer because they're on OnlyFans. They have sugar daddies. Why work 12 hours a day on your feet, having to put latex gloves on when you can diddle yourself behind the screen, get super chats and make thousands of dollars per month, tens of thousands of dollars, make more than the dentist does. I wouldn't be a dental hygienist either if I were a hot babe with hot lips and a big ass and a big chest. I would be on OnlyFans or I'd get a sugar daddy. I'm not gonna wear scrubs and have to just scrape the tartar off of a stranger's tooth. No fucking way. I'm signing up for a nefarious site. I'm playing with my boobs. I'm getting my girlfriends. I'm fucking my boyfriend on camera. I'm getting a sugar daddy when I'm on campus, and I'm going on high dining dinners, and I'm serving him once or twice a month, and I'm getting a nice handbag and my apartment paid for. So I cannot sit here today, episode 119 of Verbal Graffiti, and be critical of the babes who have decided to bypass the career to get to that guy with wealth to have the easy living. When they bypass that and just go make their own career on OnlyFans or get a sugar daddy and just bypass having to work, you know, the stereotypical 7:30 to 3:30 Monday through Friday, and maybe on Saturday. I can't be critical of her, because I would do the same exact thing if I was a cutie patootie and I had, you know, and I had the goods, the services that John's on the internet would pay for. So I can't, but it does sadden me. It does sadden me, you know, that every time I get my teeth cleaned now, twice a year, from now till my last living day, that I'll no longer have a dental hygienist that just early 20s where just she smells like lavender. She just, and she bends over and I could kind of look into her cleavage a little bit and a little flirtation. And I'm not getting that. What I thought was a given a decade previously is no longer. And honestly, I wish I had more appreciation for it when I had that hot 25-year-old dental hygienist who kind of used me and all of us getting our teeth cleaned to get to the dentist who makes $300,000 and break up his marriage to be the side piece and push the wife aside and become the main piece, the second marriage, the best marriage. So I was a bit crestfallen before I even went in to get the cleaning, because I was thinking about in my head. I was like, oh, damn, I'm going to have an old hag dental hygienist cleaning my teeth. What the? America, man. And then you go on the internet, right? You go to the dentist, you go to the doctor, you go to your cafe, wherever you go. It's old hags who couldn't lock down a real high-paying career or a man with a high-paying career. So they got to work these shitty jobs. But so you don't see hot babes when you're out in the real world. But then you go on the internet, like, all right, well, maybe that's where all the hot babes are. And it is where they are, but you don't know what they look like, because they're always... they use so many face filters and they inject so many chemicals into their lips. So you never, you don't know where the lips, there's no definition, because they're just, it's puffy. It just looks like they've been stung by bees. And then they get so much work done on their body, and they use like cartoon voices where it's so you don't even see any hot babes on the internet when you're actually searching for a babe who's hot. So if you're not seeing him in real life, which I'm not, and I'm not seeing him on the internet, which I'm not, like, I don't even know what it means to be attractive. Because I can't recall the last time I saw an attractive babe, person of the opposite sex. And I suspect women who are attracted to men have this same problem. And we all have this problem. Like, what is attractiveness if our eyes can't... if you go a certain period of time without seeing a person who's attractive, you do lose the sense of what is attractive and what is not. Because all I'm seeing, all these beautiful, these stunning blue eyes of mine that look like the Pacific Ocean. You can mistake my eyes for the Pacific Ocean. All these eyes are seen are uglies. I look in the mirror, I'm ugly. I look on the internet, ugly. I look at the dental hygienist, ugly. A lady walking her dog, wearing sweatpants and a hoodie, ugly. I go running, I see a lady wearing leggings with her baby cart thing, ugly. The baby, ugly. Everything is ugly. And it all, the ugliest of them all, the dental old hag hygienists. Moving along. All right, I found this post on a subreddit called Death by Millennial. A future is not guaranteed. 34 years old. I'm not sure what it'll be. Sorry. 34 years old. I'm not sure what it'll be since the new GOP and previous president 2016 is in office. That would be Donald Trump. And now me thinking about what if their things are going. I always wanted kids, but that's not going to be a hill I'll have to walk back down on. Plus the regrets people are posting online. Making the same federal minimum wage as $7.25 based on where you live by state. The average person is basically making $13, $14, $15, $16, $17, $18, $19, or $20 an hour. With rent unsustainable and home ownership is far from being a reality to keep up with repairs, with payments, like what I just mentioned, even the mortgage. I plan on moving out into an apartment, good for you, and just know that it may become nothing but the same rigorous process of keeping up with bills and payments, but whatever happens, there is no future. Just basking in dreams before death. Oh, oh. Well, what do you want me to say, mister? Why don't you take some morphine, inject it straight into your veins, and fall asleep forever? Why don't you just act like old Yeller, go out into the woods, and we'll put a bullet into back to your head and call it a life? You're such a... I thought I was a pessimist. Like, I thought going into this episode, I can't make any pixie dust out of this episode. But you, I mean, you're so weak-minded. Like, so Donald Trump is president. 4 years. He's going to be president for 4 years, and you want to give up on life? You want to be the Charlie Brown of real life? Like, there's no helping somebody like you because you don't want to be helped. You enjoy wallowing in the depths of your dread and just defeatist attitude that you have. Like, you enjoy the tears of sadness. You're not even searching for joy. You go on the internet, and everyone's posting about how life is shitty now, that we have a terrible president, and nothing, and interest rates are too high, and nobody's making any money. Well, why don't you search some puppies and kittens and children surviving cancer and ringing the bell after their last chemotherapy session? They go watch some of those posts. What's that? Jimmy V, his speech, North Carolina State. SB Award. There's nothing the B-man can do. Like, I'm going to kick you. I want to kick you because you don't deserve any uplifting. Honestly, you don't deserve a house because the way your mind works, like, if you got a house with a mortgage rate and you do not deserve a mortgage rate sub 6%. You deserve the highest interest rate there is because with the personality you have and the state of mind you're in, like, even if you could afford a mortgage, lock it down, you'd be the homeowner that complains about owning a home. Nothing will be good enough for you. You get a house. Friends, family, coworkers, churchgoers, they're like, oh, congratulations, I heard you got a mortgage, I'm so happy for you. And right away, before saying, oh, thank you, yeah, I'm thrilled, we're going to repaint the living room this weekend, you'll be like, Yeah, the septic tank broke. We got to put in a new system. That's $13,000. I don't have it. I got to take out another loan. This is breaking my back. Harry, you want to own a house so that you can complain about the cost of the maintenance you have to do on that house. That is the sole reason why you want a house. It's not that you want your privacy. You just want to bitch and complain, whine and moan and cry to everybody in your life about just how life is shitty for you. Well, I don't want your shit. The B-Man, all of us here at Verbal Graffiti, get away from us with your shit because it stinks and I want no part of it. And as for minimum wage, why are you thinking about minimum wage? All right, here's my theory. No, this is not even a theory. This is reality. You start at minimum wage and you work your way up periodically throughout your life. Like, if you're working minimum wage and you're stuck at minimum wage for more than 2 years, that's on you. That's your fault. You deserve to be making minimum wage. Hey, even if you're working a dead end job, you'll get a quarter, a 75-cent raise every 6 months, every year. Like, if you're making minimum wage for multiple years, you're probably a shitty employee and deserve to be making the wage you are, which is the least out of everybody in the country. And I don't pity you. The objective with the minimum wage is you work minimum wage, you get beyond minimum wage, and then you don't look back. But when you do, you sneer at those who are making minimum wage because it's the first job they've ever had. There's a reason why that person, those people, are making minimum wage, and a lot of it has to do with their work ethic. So don't worry about minimum wage. Like, if you work hard, if you're a valuable employee, you learn some skills, you'll make a couple bucks over minimum wage. And that's the fun. That's the fun of making more than minimum wage, is looking down at the people who do make minimum wage with disgust. That's the joy of making more money. What else was I gonna say? Yeah, your life is to give up on life and joy because of somebody who's in office, who holds the presidency. Like, if you haven't figured it out by now, like, a president is not going to help your state of life. All presidents care about, Republican and Democrat, is using that office to make millions of dollars for themselves and those, like, their inner circle. They could give a fuck about you or me or all the roads in my town with potholes and cracks in it. So let's move on because I want no more of your negativity. Let's go look at some photos. The B-Man, I'm not only a content creator, I also am a consumer of content. And recently, I was consuming some content on YouTube. There's this creator I've been following the last few months. He goes by the name Lit Nomad. I'll put a photo of his videos over here. Who he is, he's a quant, an Asian quant. If you don't know who a quant is, don't be worried, nor did I know before he explained it to me. A quant is a person who works on a trading floor, trading all those stocks, like taking our money, way overextending it, shorting our money and causing financial collapses, I think 2008. This is what this guy did. I think he's a very handsome, attractive, manly looking guy. He made $4 million working on the Chicago Stock Exchange. And he quit his job, and now he travels the country in his Tesla, sleeping in his Tesla. He goes to state parks, and a couple times a month, he'll get a really nice hotel, and he'll have a really nice meal, because the way he views life is He lives as a poor as he can, poor for a millionaire. And then he'll, a few times a month, if he really goes full out, like he'll really be able to appreciate fine dining and a date and a ski resort, things of that nature. He has fun with the money, but only a couple times a month. But he's a very interesting, well-spoken guy, a very great storyteller, very engaging. And recently, he had a 15-minute video, and his videos are short. They're anywhere between like 7 and 20 minutes. He did this video, the topic of which is how, as an Asian guy, do you get white girlfriends? And now his page, this isn't like a dating guru. He's a nomad. He travels the country, the world, and he kind of shows you where he's at and shows you how he's living, and he tells stories about his past. So he's not like a dating coach at all, but it's an interesting topic. And I watch almost all his videos. So I'm into it. I'm like, all right, I'm not an Asian guy, but how do the Asians get the whiteies? I want to know. So I listened to Lit Nomad teach me, if I was an Asian guy, how would I get a white girl? And I, as a white guy, I don't even know how to get white babes. So maybe I could pick a lesson or two from the Asian quant that is Lit Nomad. And he's going into it and he's listing off things you could do. And number one is, hey, just make a lot of money. If you're making over 200K, that makes it very, very easier to get a white girlfriend. Okay, very easy. And then he does other things you can do. One of the things he says is join a Asian group or Asian culture group or whatever it may be and become a leader in that group. Because if it's Taekwondo or like Asian food, of course, if you're the leader, women, babes, are attracted to positions of power. And if a white babe is at a Asian cultural festivity or group, she's probably into Eastern culture. She probably likes Asian men, and since you're the leader, that gives you a leg up, and you might be able to get a white girl that way. And then he was discussing K-pop. I'm not really into K-pop, but he was saying go to K-pop concerts and dress like K-pop pop stars. Because, again, if you're a white babe and you're into K-pop, you're probably attracted to Asian men. So if you show up at those K-pop concerts, you got a better chance of bagging one of those white floozies. Same thing with anime. He said go to anime conventions and know that. But then his last one, he said join an Asian cult. And that that made me giggle. I did not notice. I guess there are a lot of Asian cults that are even prevalent here in America. And he says that, yeah. A lot of these Asian cults pull white babes and they end up marrying each other. And it's actually a very strategic and successfully strategic way as an Asian man to get a white girlfriend and wife is to join an Asian cult. And I was reading through the comments and YouTube comments are great. And a lot, there's this term looks maxing. Become the best looking person you can be, and that's how you have success. And then everyone's like, oh, dude, this guy's cult maxing. Lit Nomad is cult maxing. And I could not stop laughing reading through the comments. I'll put a link right here. But yeah, if you're an Asian guy and you want a hot baddie who is white, Caucasian, join an Asian cult and rise through the ranks of the leadership of that cult. So I guess that's what I don't like white women. I prefer busty Latinas. We've been through that. So thankfully, I will not be joining an Asian cult. But it is, it's interesting to know that Asian cults are thriving here in the U.S. of A. Lit Nomad, go give him a follow. He's much more entertaining and engaging than the B-Man is here at Verbal Graffiti. All right. This comes from the subreddit, New York State of Mind. Everybody can't be a gangster. Some dudes are risk takers, drug dealers, scammers. Some dudes are crash outs, shooters, fist fighters. Some dudes are just attention seekers, social media posters, rappers. Some dudes just be having mental or emotional issues. A gangster is someone who can influence and manipulate people for their own benefit financially without being connected directly to the situation. Any disagreement? No, I have no disagreement with what you said or what your definition of what a gangster is and what a gangster is all about. It seems to me, reading your post on Reddit, that you are very adept at reading people and who they are very quickly. Though, on the other non-pistol holding hand, one thing gangsters should not be doing is posting on Reddit. Now, the internet, it's a new thing, but I can't imagine that Al Capone or El Chapo would be posting on Reddit via a pseudonym and an avatar photo of themselves. So if you're a gangster, you're not doing a good job by posting and making light of your lifestyle on a public social media forum that Reddit is. So I would cease doing that if you want to continue being a gangster that is allowed to be on the streets and not in prison. But yeah, as for your definition of what a gangster is, I have no disagreements at all. And I do think I am well equipped, well versed in the lifestyle of gangsters to pontificate on gangster lifestyle. See, because of me, man, I own season one of The Wire on a DVD box set. So that gives me license, more so than a MS-13 gang member, to discuss the lifestyle, that is, of being a gangster. And I watched the entire series that is The Wire, one of the best drama series of all time. So I am well-versed in what it is to be a gangster, and you're exactly right. A lot of people come at the B-Man. They come at Verbal Graffiti, tell me, oh, I'm a gangster. No, you're not. You're not a gangster. If you're just peddling eight balls and dime bags on your corner to the tweakers who need a fix and the gentlemen from Section 8 housing, like, you're not a gangster. You're nothing more than a pawn, right? If you don't know where your gang's stash house is, where all the drugs get made and transferred, you're not a gangster. And if you're on the corner and it's peddling the drugs, you ain't a gang. You're a pawn. You're a pawn. All of us in the gang, all of us in the gang life know that to be a real gangster, you either got to be the queen or you got to be the king, right? That's what being a gangster is. Like our poster said, you got to manipulate other people to do the dirty work for you while you're behind the tinted windows of your Escalade, in the shadows, away from the eyesight of the police and the FBI and the CIA and the president. So, I mean that's gang life 101. It's honestly, to be a gangster, like everyone on the street level, being a gangster, you ain't a gangster. You're playing make-believe. Like, you could tell people you're a gangster. You could have a unregistered firearm in the waistband of your sweatpants, but you ain't a gangster because you're working for somebody else. You're working for a real gangster. And we all play our role in this game. You got the street peddler. You got the muscle. You got the transporter. You got the law enforcement, the dirty cops. You got the lawyers that work for the gangsters. But the lawyers work for the kingpin, the queenpin. They do not work for any of the other players on the board, in the street. And again, I learned that from The Wire. So I feel like I know enough about the gangster lifestyle that everything I am saying right now cannot come at me critically. You cannot be judgmental because everything I say about gangster lifestyle is fact. And I know, listen, everything else he said is it's right on. And like last week, the last few episodes, I've been talking about wanting to be a pimp. I don't really have the makeup to be a successful street pimp. And this gangster right here, he take one look at me and go, "You ain't a pimp. You ain't a pimp. You need to be wearing glasses. Those are just for aesthetic. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You ain't no pimp. You ain't no the glasses wearing person." So yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. That's what the life of a gangster. And I can't be critical of you being a gangster. Like a real gangster. A real gangster. Life ain't easy. Maybe you saw your father OD at a very early age. Or maybe like the first time you strangle somebody to death, that you strangle them so severely that that blood drips from their nose as they shake, as they try to gasp their last breath. Like once you strangle somebody to death and see their head just hit the pavement, like you're not going back to algebra class. That transition does not happen. You stay on the street and you become the kingpin, you know, within a few years. So I'm never going to be critical of a gangster. None of us will hear a verbal graffiti from one gangster to another. Peace. I don't know. All right. Let's continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. We are on, I believe, the top of page 109. Yes, 109. We will read two pages together. The doctor placed her limp panties on a chair with her other clothes and joined his son in self-arousal. They stood by the bed, gazing down at the voluptuous young female who lay in a hazy fog on the bed, running their hands lewdly over their cocks and balls while the amplified heartbeat began to increase its rhythm. Pamela's brain was reeling with delight as she lay on the bed. She felt the mattress move under her as someone climbed on it, and she opened her eyes to see what was happening. There, straddling his knees on either side of her shoulders, was the young assistant, Garrett, grinning down at her lewdly, gripping his massive penis with his hands. For a moment, she was startled, but the vision she beheld through her drug-clouded eyes took her breath away. He was the most beautiful male she had ever seen. His well-defined torso gleamed and glowed. His skin was sun-bronzed, his face wildly attractive. With his hands, he extended his swollen penis toward her, jutting his hips so that the huge bulbous head neared her mouth. It, too, was exciting beyond words to the drugged young housewife. She wanted to suck it. She wanted to wrap her lips around the potent prize and devoured a thickly throbbing flesh. With a cry of delight, she grasped his mighty tool and took it into her mouth. She could feel its enormity completely filling her mouth, and it thrilled her as nothing had before. There was a distinctly male taste as the thick rod of flesh exuded tiny drops of excited seminal fluid, which she swallowed eagerly. She was ecstatic as she heard her doctor's young assistant groan above her. His two hands locked tightly around her face as he began moving her head back and forth while straining his giant cock into her greedily sucking mouth. "Suck it," he groaned. "Oh yes, suck it." Meanwhile, Carlsberg had begun to busy himself by running his hands hotly over the flesh of Pamela's hips and thighs. Excited by the sight of his son fervently fucking his patient in the mouth, his middle finger quickly slipped beneath her firmly rounded buttocks and found a tight, tiny crevice of her anus. He began teasingly explore it. Pamela was only dimly aware of his activities, for she was completely absorbed in the mad pleasure of sucking Garrett's thick cock. Suddenly, however, Carlsberg snaked his middle finger into her tight anal ring until it buried inside the rubbery nether cavity. A sharp ripple of a sharp ripple of pain shot through her body, and for the first time that afternoon, she tensed and experienced a surge of anxiety and fear. It was the first time anyone had touched her there since her husband had brutally raped her, and the remembrance of that event caught Pamela off guard. Terror filled her mind, and her body tensed rigidly as Carlsberg plunged his finger deeper and deeper into the tight passage. Go suck a fat one.